Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Kurt Palka. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and a glimpse perhaps into their lives. We ask them what prompts them to write and get an opportunity to hear them read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to have novelist Kurt Palka join us. Welcome, Kurt.
Thank you.
Kurt Palka was born and educated in Austria. He began his working life in Africa, where he wrote African Mirror and made wildlife films in Kenya and Tanzania. While working as a journalist, he covered the war in Vietnam and events in the Middle East for television. He has worked on international stories for CTV and Global TV, written for American and Canadian publications such as The Chronicle, Herald, and The Globe and Mail, and worked as a senior producer for the CBC. Clara, originally published in hardcover as Patient Number 7, his fifth novel, was a finalist for the Hammett Prize. He is also the author of The Piano Maker, and The Hour of the Fox, published in July 2018 by McClellan and Stewart, is Kurt's seventh novel. So you were a very successful journalist for many years, Kurt. When and why did you start writing fiction?
Along the way, really, I began writing fiction. I would say the first book came out in 19, a long time ago, in 1980, 82, thereabouts. I wrote along the way. At the time, I was working for CBC, and the fiction writing thing, in fact, the novel writing thing had always been what I wanted to do, really. So eventually it became possible, not just time-wise, but somehow the inner space was made it possible. So a long time ago, I've been wanting to be a writer for, I decided to be a writer in high school.
Yeah.
A long time ago in high school, really, you know. There was actually one of the questions in that CBC Magic 8 questions, when and why did you decide to become a writer? And I said, it's because in high school, in senior high school, I decided that writing was actually a wonderful way to look at the world in different ways, to sort of take the world and take it apart and put it back together again in different ways. And that's still the case, really.
Yeah.
It's one way to examine the world, give you a chance to sort of slow yourself down. Very important, slow yourself down and look at the world and put it back together in the way you think perhaps it might be or should be or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then create your characters accordingly. You know, the characters you create are in fact part of that desire to, what are you looking at now? What at this stage in life? What interests you at this stage in life? What do you want to write about?
Right.
And so this is where the last three novels came from. Clearly Clara came from that. The Hour of the Fox came from that, and The Piano Maker came from that. You know, there were certain kinds of characters who had certain issues, not just issues, but certain inner desires and that they needed to examine and deal with. And so that's where they came from the same place, really.
Well, let's pick that up a little. Tell us about Clara, first published as Patient Number 7.
Yes.
The book is described as a true story, but is it your family story?
The way I described it was close, very close. But something like a novel inspired by actual events set against the background of recorded history and documented fact. Nevertheless, it's a work of the imagination, and except for persons known to history, the names and incidents in the story are either imaginary or used fictitiously. So it's certainly set in historical framework and time,
mm-hmm.
and the conditions of the time and situations of the time would be such. But her personal story is her personal story, and to write that book, I used family documents. It's true. I found that we're talking about Europe in the 30s into the 40s. We're talking about, you know, pre-World War II war, post-war period, a very difficult time. And so I created Clara as a character, and I set her into Vienna of 1932, what was it like to be a young woman then? What was she taught? How did she? Who were her parents? What were the values and the ethics, the beliefs she absorbed? And, you know, in fact, for that I had some examples because, you know, the previous generation of you know, some very exceptional women that I knew went to Vienna University at that time. You know, and they had these teachers, they had these amazing teachers who would come by and teach. Existentialism was the way to live. It was a way of life, you know. But in terms of, in that sense, it also gave you a set of principles laid down by Heidegger, and Heidegger came there to teach. So if you have teachers like Freud and Heidegger and whatnot once in a while, and you can knock on their door and say, excuse me, professor, can you explain this to me? How does this go? You know, what kind of a person would you grow up to be?
Yeah.
You know, that was exactly what I looked at.
Good question to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with all that experience in Europe, what brought you to North America?
I really began traveling as a young man after I went to a business school and began traveling there and went to, in those days, South Africa was the place to go. And so I went there and I spent some years there and I did various things and I wrote for a program called African Mirror, which was actually a newsreel, as a matter of fact. And then from there moved north into Tanzania and Kenya. And then at some point decided to go to North America, just basically check it out. And between that I had family in England, so I spent some time in England and in France, as a matter of fact, and then came to Canada, really intending to look at North America the same way, except at the time then it was the Vietnam War, and I ended up working for CTV, and I got, you know, a terrific job, so that's where I stayed.
Yeah.
So I just stayed here. That's what happened. That's the way it happened.
Did you find any cultural differences that you had to adjust to when you came to North America?
Not really. I mean, Canada was Canada really was a wide open country in the sense of culture. The mainstream culture was so flexible and so post-colonial still, really, that there was nothing. You would find that if you were to go to France, for example, or to a sort of a specific country like that, but not in Canada, and there's no problem at all, really.
Great. Well, I'd love to have you read a little for us, perhaps from Clara.
From Clara? Okay. I forgot, but there you go. Clara, you know, let me just explain to you, Clara, these three books actually are women's stories. There's one central character in all three cases. That is a woman whom I've chosen to carry the main story in that sense. And in the sense, it is driven by her it's all seen through her eyes, all seen through her eyes, and through her consciousness, really. But in that sense, that conflict character really isn't that defined in some way also by how do you deal with conflict situations. And in many cases, to me anyway, the most interesting conflict is not just problems in daily life, which are, you know, factual problems, but actually in the conflict situations, how do you deal with certain situations? What is your attitude to that and that kind of thing? And that in a way drives these stories for me, inner conflict. And conflict, of course, is in any story, it's the lifeblood. So it's conflict that drives the story. So
Absolutely.
In this case here, mm-hmm. it's how does she deal with with the way in which life presents itself to her. How does she deal with that kind of thing? And in Clara, the main story is the central story that goes back to her youth, but it begins in old age, and that then becomes the framing story. Okay. Let me just put on some other glasses here so I can read this. I'm going to read to you just a little bit here, a couple of pages from Clara. The day she buried her husband, there were nearly 100 mourners at the Benedictine chapel. She had wanted just family and friends, but then her daughters had taken over and the list had grown. Now it included people from the museum and from City Hall,
and a defense minister and military attachés from a number of embassies were there as well. There was an intense smell from the lilies in the chapel and from people's wet clothes. When the doors opened and the coffin was carried out, you could smell the horses too. Two black Belgians, they were beautiful horses in leather and brass tackle, unshod for the occasion, as was traditional. When the coffin approached, they tossed their heads and their breath steamed in the cold air. When the coffin was set down onto the cart bed and pushed forward, the springs gave way with a gritty sound of rust. She stood at the tailgate, dressed in black from hat to button shoes. She wore one of her mother's formal coats of black gabardine from the late 1800s, heavy and long, with wide lapels and black velvet cuffs. It weighed her down and bent her shoulders and back, and when she reached out and placed a bare hand on the coffin, none of the mourners could see her face for the veil. But how they stared at her and ate it up, this dark and timeless scene. When her husband had been alive, few of these mourners had shown much love for him. After all, he'd been famous, and famous men have few friends. In his later years, many had admired him, but certainly there were those who'd whispered about his past, even though they had not the faintest idea of the man he had been and of the time he lived through. Only she knew, because she had lived it with him from the beginning. That day at the cemetery, when she removed her hand from the coffin and a coachman shook the reins and clicked his tongue and said, "Go, girls, go!" And those enormous horses leaned into the traces and raised the first polished hoof to take him away. At that moment, and from that moment on, she stood alone. She stood like the last person in a house already emptied and dark on moving day. And she looked after coffin and cart and horses leaving, and she stood like this for a long time. Finally she stirred. She took a tissue from her cuff and used it behind the veil, and she turned her narrow back on the black in the black coat on all of them and walked away.
Well, thank you, Kurt. Yeah. Very sad.
Well,
very,
yeah.
Very atmospheric too.
Yes.
Lovely scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been speaking with Kurt Palka, novelist, and we will come back after this short break.